Today's episode of the StarTime Podcast is brought to you by Warby Parker. Do you need a new pair of glasses? We'll get a free 5-day home try-on at www.warbyparkertrial.com/paranormal. You'll get 5 pairs for 5 days to try on 100% free. Welcome to the Start Time Podcast with Bran
and Dave.
Dave, it is Wednesday, which means it's, what is it?
Hump day.
Okay, yep. And also,
you want me to finish it?
Interview day.
It's also, Bran, we're going to be interviewing someone today on the show.
I love it when we do this.
This is why I do what we do.
Really?
Yeah, the rest, I enjoy the other things, but if these weren't there, like, these are the ones that, like, I feel are, like, the cream.
Yeah.
You know what
but
I mean?
You know what's interesting, Dave? I've enjoyed doing the Start Time news more than I thought I would.
Well, I enjoy it more, but I'm saying it's all for the sake of, it's like if this is the cream, then that other stuff is the cake. Like, it's a good little making the bread foundational stuff, but on its own, like, it definitely is the thing that keeps me going, is getting to talk to these people.
Yeah. Now, Dave, I want to ask you, we're quite a bit into this now. Have you felt like your worldview, as far as the worldview of the paranormal, has changed at all since starting this podcast, or are you still where you were in August?
Well, I can't pin it only on this, but it has changed. I don't know if it's because there's a lot of things that have happened in my life. You know?
Yeah, but has anything specifically that we've talked about changed the way you think?
The main thing is that I think the thing I've realized is that there's just so many different ways to think about the same things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is an interesting fact. And today, I think, is no different, because we're going to be talking about a guy, not just it from what I understand, this is more about the UFOs than it is about anything else. So understanding the UFO phenomenon, because here's the deal, Dave, lots and lots of UFO sightings happen every single day. So what the heck are they? And so our interview today is with Robert Davis, and he has a book. It's called The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? And I'm hoping, going into the interview, I hope that I will come out on the other side with a new understanding of what the heck UFOs are.
Yeah.
Dave?
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering something, and I wanted to know if you would mind me asking you.
Ask away, Brandon.
What's your favorite color?
Alien. My favorite color?
Favorite color, alien.
Oh, favorite color, alien?
Mm-hmm.
I like the kind of grayish white.
Yeah, the grays. That's a good question. You got a question for me?
How many like appendages would you want the alien to have?
3. Hey, Dave, one thing I'm really enjoying is, you know, we wake up and we do this podcast every day, but it almost feels like at the end of the day, when it's still light outside, it almost feels like it's worth it.
Oh, yeah.
I felt I was up late last night because I felt I had so much energy. I didn't know, I couldn't figure out exactly why it was, and then I realized, oh, it's because the daylight lasted longer.
And if I could pay, like, if it cost money to make daylight savings happen, I would pay for it, like, whatever the cost. You know what I mean? Like, $100, yeah.
I saw someone pose this question on the social medias, and I thought maybe you would know the answer. I don't know if you will or not, but why is it that we do the time change at 2 a.m. on a Sunday morning, instead of like an afternoon or 5 o'clock or 4 o'clock on Friday?
I don't think it has anything to do with like the day. I think it's specifically the time of the calendar year. I mean, the entire year that you do it.
Yeah, but like it always happens. Every time change happens at Sunday at 2 a.m.
Right, because that's when the Earth, like at the, that point in the when it's on there in the rotation around the sun, that it works out. It's not, it has, it's not like they chose based on what the day was. Like, they didn't choose weekends.
But what I'm saying is, ultimately, you could do it whenever you wanted to, though, because it would work itself out. There's nothing special about 2 a.m. ultimately that makes it to where it actually works out this way. You're just simply changing your clock.
And then that being said, what the ambiguousness of it becomes... this is the thing, Brent, is you have to think about, is that we're all experiencing it at a different time anyways.
What do you mean?
Like, everybody in the world has a different time zone.
Yeah, no, I understand that. So, like, even... So, but what I'm saying is for us, like, leading up into last Sunday, the days were already getting longer. So what would it matter if we did it the Friday before at 4 o'clock, we get off of work an hour earlier? Well, we're just going to do the same exact thing, but instead in the middle of the night on Sunday so that I lose an hour of sleep. I would rather lose an hour of work than an hour of sleep, is what I'm saying. And ultimately, that day and a half doesn't do anything.
I don't know, Brandon. It seems like that would be really inconvenient.
Why? To get off of work an hour early? It's more inconvenient to you to get off of work an hour early than it is to lose an hour of sleep?
No, I mean inconvenient for the rest of the world.
The rest of the world? No one else does this except for us.
No, I mean like anybody that's interacting with, that interacts with the United States, with anybody that's doing that, there's only certain spots that don't do things. But, what you have, it has to be in a place that's going to make the least difference. Like, for instance, let's just take the stock exchange. Like, that, there's computer systems that are running that don't even close until Sunday. And so it would have to be on Sunday.
So it's really all about the money, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Okay. But also, this is something that was decided a while ago. Because, again, it's about, like, when the precise best time is to do it. Like when there's the peaking of where the sun is.
And I would just say, as a worship leader who wakes up early on Sunday mornings, I don't appreciate it at 2 a.m. And no one thought to ask us.
Yeah. Home?
You only asked the guys in the New York, the stocks.
But that being said, why didn't you just look it up instead of asking Facebook?
I didn't ask Facebook. Somebody did, and I saw that and said, huh.
Oh.
Yep, wasn't me, though.
I've always been curious why anybody would paste a comment on Facebook of something that if they had done that exact same thing in Google, they would have gotten the exact answer right away. That just doesn't make sense to me. Like, hey, why, when did that one band break up? Like, oh.
Well, no, like, so for instance, Dave, I did something on social media the other day when I said, has anybody tried, I guess this isn't necessarily the same thing, but I said, has anybody tried one of those meal, whatever, like Blue Apron, when they send you the meals that you need for a week and then you do them?
And but that's because you wanted to get, like, honest people that you
Yeah, no, I understood after review. I started to say that I guess it's different because I don't want to just read people's blogs about it.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I would go the same route as you if I was going to do something like that. But I would just look at reviews. But if I really wanted to know, then that would be a worthwhile reason. But a fact thing, like a certain specific thing that is, there's only one answer. You're just better off to Googling it.
Mm, you said it, Dave. Hey, Dave, here's what I think we should do. I think that we should go to a quick break. And then come on back and interview Robert Davis about the UFOs.
Yeah, hit me with a break.
Okay. See you in a few.
See ya.
Hey,
Brandon.
Dave. Oh. Yeah, Dave?
Hey, Brandon.
Is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Hey, friend.
Brandon, I can't... I don't mean to be a real prune in your side, Brand. But I was just out and people were making fun of me because my glasses, you know, the ones, they're not as necessarily as hip. And everybody else kept talking about how much cooler they were than me because my glasses just weren't cutting it. And I just don't know what to do. I don't have a lot of time. I go to work every day, I live in the city, and I just haven't had time. I don't have time to go to pick out a new pair. Yeah. So maybe they're behind the times. So I just, Brand, what do I do?
Dave, here's the thing. I told you before you moved to Brooklyn, you should get new glasses because they're pretty harsh on the glasses.
They're so harsh and they're so like trendy over here. Yeah. I don't know if I belong here, Brand. I don't know if I can do it.
Well, you know what? Let me give you a quick tip. You can try it out and we'll see how it goes. Okay.
Yeah.
Here's the deal, Dave. There's a glasses company that makes some super cool glasses. Okay. It's called Warby Parker. Maybe you've heard of them. Warby Parker makes all the glasses that anyone wears in Brooklyn. Maybe that's not true, but a lot of people probably wear them because they're so cool and everybody should wear them. And here's the thing, Dave, one thing you mentioned was that you don't have a lot of time. I have the ultimate solution for you.
What is it?
Glasses shopping is exhausting. So how about you do a 5-day free try-on of, get this, Dave, 5 pairs of glasses.
5 and 5?
Yeah, 5 pairs of glasses for 5 days, completely free.
So then I could like try one out each day.
Mm-hmm, that's the idea.
Huh.
Yep.
So it looks like no more making fun of Dave?
No more making fun of Dave. And Dave, let me tell you, this is so easy. Are you ready for this?
I want you to tell me.
Go to www.warbyparkertrial.com/paranormal. Now, Dave, don't forget the www on this one. It's actually important, okay? So I'm going to read it back to you. www.warbyparkertrial.
Sorry, I'm writing this one down. www.warbyparkertrial.com.
Yeah, you wrote down the www, right?
Yeah, www.warbyparkertrial.com.
Nope. www.warbyparkertrial.com.
Oh, okay. So www.warbyparkertrial.com.
/paranormal.
And don't you forget that /paranormal.
Absolutely. And Dave, it's just that easy. You'll be helping out us at the start time, and you'll get yourself one heck of a stylish pair of glasses.
Oh, man, I hope I get a pair of glasses.
Yeah, you will. You'll get 5 pairs for 5 days to try on. Get it. Warby Parker, the best a man can get.
How can I see better?
Warby Parker. Try it. And welcome back to the Star Time Podcast. Dave.
Yes, sir.
It is interview time. It's the time that you and I wait for all week long, the moment where we get to sit down and discuss with people far smarter than we are the world of the paranormal.
It's a beautiful thing, Brand.
Absolutely.
It's a stretch. It's like that's why it's my weekly exercise of the brain.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to say it in the most confusing way also. Hey, Dave, today we're really lucky. We got a PhD. So, buckle up. Robert Davis, PhD, is an internationally recognized scientist in his field and serves as a professor of the State University of New York. Dave, you know State.
Mm-hmm.
For over 30 years, he's been there. He graduated with a BA and MA from the City University in New York and with a PhD in neuroscience and hearing science from the Ohio State University. He has also published over 40 articles. And currently, his research and investigation into the UFO phenomenon convinced him that the phenomenon remains unresolved, and we're excited to talk to him about that tonight. He has a book that is out about the UFO phenomenon. It's called The UFO Phenomenon, Should I Believe? Please welcome to the Star Time Podcast, Robert Davis. Hello, Robert.
Well, hi. It's a pleasure to be here on your excellent show.
Oh, excellent show. You're too kind. Not many people would say that. So you're one. Dave, can I ask you a question, Bob? Do you have a problem with the here's you know, how would you pronounce our show with one R?
Starry Time.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
That's right.
See, people have a hard time with it because it's, you know, it looks like Starry Time, but we wanted to go with Story Time, like the play on words. It's not as good as we hoped it would be. Hey, Robert, tell us real quick. You've had this book out. When did you publish this book?
It came out last spring.
Okay, and what kind of made you want to write down all of the things that you've been studying, and how long had you been studying about the UFO phenomenon up to that point?
Good question. Briefly, it began in my early youth, maybe watching too many Star Trek episodes, sci-fi films. I've always been intrigued in the phenomenon. Why, I'm not entirely certain, but back in 2012, my wife and I, while visiting Sedona, Arizona, observed two orange orbs in the night sky. One appeared to move from behind the other one. They remained stationary and then eventually winked out. That just reinforced my already inherent interest mm-hmm. in this phenomenon, which is, without question, a real phenomenon. What it is remains to be seen, and we will obviously discuss that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so let's talk about real quick, when we say UFO, obviously we mean unidentified flying object, but when you began to look at this, did you find that a lot of the UFOs that people see on a daily basis, do they immediately assume alien, or do they first seek out what else it could be before going to, like, what is the normal process of trying to figure out, is it a UFO? Is it an automatic assumption that it's an alien, or is there a scientific approach to it?
Well, it's a very good, broad question. Very, very difficult to answer because it varies considerably on the nature of the manifestation of the phenomenon itself, which could be nothing more than an anomalous aerial aircraft made by us or some geomagnetic explanation of various types, like plasma. But the point is, sometimes it's up front and center and unmistakable to be highly aberrant and anomalous in nature for a variety of reasons, which, according to many people, feel as if it's real as the hand in front of your face. We're talking about upfront and close no contact with non-human alien intelligences. This is what people report. This is not what I'm advocating for the listener to obviously make up his or her own mind. But there are hundreds of thousands, if not millions, worldwide that have strange encounters. The vast, vast majority have been shown for decades through various studies that the vast, vast majority of what we consider to be unidentified aerial phenomena, flying objects, is explanatory in nature. It's for a variety of reasons. Mm-hmm. It does remain to be a small percentage that defies logical explanation, and it's highly compelling. If anyone looked at the data, they'd come to that realization. So it's hard to answer your question certainly in one sentence or paragraph because. Mm-hmm. It addresses so many complex issues, and it's relative to the person himself, their own personality, how vulnerable they are, how believable they may be, whether they're fantasy prone or aberrant, have some type of aberrant personality, which may allow them to interpret the same event in a different way than another person of another personality. So there's a wide spectrum of issues associated with many different topic areas. And it's an excellent question, difficult to answer.
sure.
You mentioned before that you had your wife, you saw aliens together.
UFOs that kind of, together.
Sorry, yeah, the UFOs, the orange lights that you saw. Now, is that the thing that kind of sparked your interest in kind of trying to apply your specific expertise in science knowledge to kind of were doing research in this, or was that already happening before, or did it take a while after that?
No, I appreciate that question. It's quite appropriate and insightful. It made me take up instant notice. Mm-hmm. I saw anything quite like that before. They're not rare in occurrence. People do see orange orbs of various shapes, sizes, and colors. It could simply be a ionized plasma gas, or it may be intelligently controlled by something other than human beings. It's not for me to say, but the point is, again, there is something in our skies for centuries worldwide that does defy logical explanation, as I said earlier. There's no question about that. and we can dissect previous incidents and events like Roswell, of Emerson, among many, many others. Some, in fact, are quite compelling, and it would do us no good. There's ample evidence to document that something strange is happening from the highest level down. The question is, what is it? The orange orbs I saw are fairly simplistic in nature. People have much more upfront, as I said earlier, in personal contact with alien entities, so they say. And as a member on the board of directors and researcher for the relatively new foundation for research into extraterrestrial encounters, mm-hmm. known as FREE, F-R-E-E, we're doing many things, one of which is a scientific-based study. It is composed of individuals from many scientific disciplines, and as well as non-scientific disciplines. Mm-hmm. Conduct a survey, in the sense of those individuals who have conscious recall of close encounters. In some cases, they're abducted, and in some cases, they see these beings, or are aboard a spacecraft, or some type of other anomaly, like telepathic communication with some type of entity.
Right.
So they claim. And the results are startling. I don't know what it implies, other than either something extraordinarily beyond comprehension is occurring to so many people who report so many similar, as well as different events, the vast majority being positive, some, however, being negative in nature for a variety of reasons. But that's in the minority, about one-third or less. Question is, is it in their minds completely? Is this a psychological phenomenon that we simply do not know about? I can't dispel that. That's a possibility. Or it's really happening. I can't dispel that either.
Absolutely.
I'm a skeptic. I'm agnostic. I'll let the reader interpret my book for how he or she sees it.
Right.
I try not to persuade them one way or the other, as I'm doing now. And maybe I am, and maybe I don't mean to. But, a lot of ufologists will make contentions that they're extraterrestrial, extra-dimensional, et cetera, on evidence that isn't scientifically derived, isn't objective, largely anecdotal, some of which, however, is physical in the sense that it's visual by airplane pilot, as well as being tracked on radar on the ground, and also observed by another plane. So we have like three separate confirmations of a very strange and unusual maneuvering craft. And travel up to reportedly 12,000 miles an hour, make the right angle turns, vary in size and shape, reportedly, do things that we shouldn't be able to do even with our most black box projects out there, which I'm sure can do wild and different things, but likely not of a type that's described by many people back in the 60s and 70s when we certainly didn't have advanced technology. And this doesn't happen to one person with a bottle of whiskey in the woods.
Right.
In the sky. Many sane people, including astronauts, Edgar Mitchell being one. He was a member of this foundation I mentioned earlier, FREE. Uh-huh. Yes, passed away. He walked on the moon back in the mid-70s. Wonderful individual. Also founded the Institute of Noetic Studies. Did a lot of research in quantum physics and consciousness. And was a strong believer in this phenomenon, and had spoken openly about his conversations with many people in the government and military, names not being mentioned, who have told him up front and center, the phenomenon exists, we know about it, we have evidence to verify it. We don't know what it is either.
Right, absolutely.
So it's 2015, maybe 100 years, maybe 1,000 years, if ever.
Yeah, absolutely.
We'll know more about it.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot about it.
Yeah. Dave?
Yeah, I was going to say, based on the previous question I asked, it seems like for everybody that does begin to take this seriously, they had at least themselves an encounter, like a personal encounter. Me and Brain have kind of found that to be true with anybody that we've talked to, even though they aren't, not every case that they're pointing out is something that they personally been involved with, they did have at least one that kind of opened the door for them. Now, do you, have you ever encountered someone that is based purely on just kind of looking at stories or evidence and stuff like that, the science of it, they have turned to believe in it wholeheartedly? Or do you think that part of becoming a believer is kind of having your own encounters, is that's a almost like a qualification in order to get you in there?
Excellent point. It really is. That's getting at the heart, in a sense, of the matter. I have spoken with several people who are as saner than I am, who have had experience, not saying much, right?
Yeah.
Had experiences, and I'll tell you, shakes your head and leaves an impression on you in terms of what the hell's going on here.
Yeah.
You know, things happen in their living room to members of their family, strange-looking creatures, periods of unconsciousness, and so it's all conscious recall. Multiple witnesses, same story, it goes on and on. And that's just one person. I'm sparing you details.
Right. We'll get to the details in a little bit.
You know, but it goes on and on.
Yeah.
Variations of a theme, something highly unusual that changes, that is life transforming. Like people have near-death experiences, often have a life-transforming effect from it. They feel motivated to pursue the truth. They become more loving, they become more conscious, more psychic, more caring, a better person in many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And people who have, you know, these kinds of paranormal experiences also as well, not all. Why? I don't know. There seems to be a consciousness connection, an issue that has been brought up by many researchers over the years in ufology and psychology. And many serious scientists are looking at this phenomenon, closet ufologists, quantum physicists, scientists from all disciplines. Unfortunately, many more are not, for a variety of reasons, which is highly unfortunate. Ufology gets a bad name with all the New Agers involved,
mm-hmm.
and it lacks a lot of scientific rigor that it must have. And I address that, the need for that in my textbook.
Just to kind of go into that a little bit more, like one of the things that you seem to advocate the most for is a need for some sort of governing structure, if you will, that dives into this more, that this is their job to try to figure out the science behind it. So do you have any idea of what that might, like in an ideal world, what that would look like? Like, what do you think this study needs as far as a governing structure to give some insight and some wisdom into it?
This has been kicked around for many years, so it's a good question. A lot of different proposals have been made. Obviously, the first thing that comes to mind is the Committee of the United Nations, et cetera, et cetera. Under unified, scientific discipline, leading scholars, as well as politicians, businessmen, etc., etc. Those things have been proposed for a long time. The problem is ufology is highly fragmented. It lacks leadership, direction, research focus, in a sense, as well as, what is this phenomenon all about? What's the best way to study it? What's the best principles that can possibly be utilized to understand what's going on?
Mm-hmm.
And it's largely ignored by the scientific community in general, and different organizations worldwide, and just about all countries have a UFO organization. Some of course being much more active than others. Like us, we have MUFON, we have ICAR, we have etc.
SETI.
But it lacks a scientific rigor. You can't necessarily take a UFO and test it in a laboratory either. But there are things that should be done, and want us to gather a unified group of leading scientists, many scientists from the vast range of disciplines. Unify them, and not entirely sure, getting to the heart of your question. I don't know what kind of governance structure, public or private, or a combination of, should oversee, provide the necessary resources, fiscal and human in nature, to lead that type of research effort. That's, you know, we kind of look proactively instead of too many ufologists look retroactively. You know, the aliens crashed at Roswell. You know, excuse my language, I don't give a shit. You know, how many more books do we need to write on that topic? Something extraordinary happened, yeah. Probably a Russian, you know, Russian balloon or owl balloon. At the time was top secret, highly sensitive. That's my gut feeling. I could be wrong. Maybe it was Martians. I don't know. But we're never going to find out what the answer is, irrefutable answer is. So, yeah. So the hell with that stuff and the hell with the other stuff, although we do learn a lot about it. I'm not dispelling that.
Yeah.
So the analysis is very helpful.
Yeah. So where are you? You know, some people would argue, I mean, there is a governing structure. That governing structure is the government, but they're not telling us that they are actually researching it and doing the studies that you're advocating for. Where do you land on that? Do you think that there is some sort of government conspiracy, that they do have the UFOs in Area 51 and all that good stuff?
You know, if anybody knows, it's a select group of people who are obviously high up and they don't want to go to Leavenworth, so they're not going to tell anybody, including their wife. And I certainly don't know for sure. Wouldn't surprise me. I go by what Leslie King, who wrote the book, I think the title UFOs, U.S. Generals, whatever, a good book, where she says, she reportedly says in her book that she was told by a top level of, I forget who, military government official, that there's an unacknowledged special access program where only those, of course, in the know, so to speak, are conducting research on captured UFOs. Well, you know, I don't know, third-hand information, you know, you're not fourth-hand information. Is it true? I don't know. Maybe it is. You know, we hear this all the time, different conspiracies, ideas, opinions. There's sense and there's nonsense. The point is, we don't know which is what. We hear some of the wildest things. You guys have. You've talked to them all on your excellent show. You don't know what to believe. I'm a skeptic. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, you two are a skeptic as well, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
And you should be. We don't have all the evidence. We don't have all the data, the facts. I think, however, we do have enough to say that there is definitely a phenomenon occurring. I will go on the ledge and say that, and I will defend that. There is something extraordinary happening.
Could you...
what it is, I do not know, nor do you, nor does maybe a few people know. I don't know who they are, but they're not ufologists. Something's happening.
Right. Now, we've kind of been talking that there are a lot of things that have been happening, and there's a lot of people that have seen a lot of things. Now, to just kind of give like an actual example of that, could you kind of provide some of the most compelling evidence or the most compelling stories that you've heard that are proof that not only are there UFOs, but that they're not involved with human, that they're from non-human sources?
Well, you know, that's another good question. You guys have done your homework and you know a lot about this topic.
It comes
from two sources. You know, I've heard personal, individual accounts, like I mentioned earlier, that are astonishing, absolutely astonishing. Either they should be locked away in an institution because of their extraordinary hallucinations, or what happened to them is indescribable and suggestive of something that is remarkable, whatever that might be. Oh, we're talking about alien creatures. We're talking about many different kinds of things that we can't explain. Again, another psychological phenomenon we're not familiar with. But then again, there are numerous historic incidents whereby radar tracked UFOs doing maneuvers that were way beyond technology at the present time, confirmed by airplane pilots. Probably what turns me on in terms of nuts and bolts incidents, getting to your question more specifically, was when UFOs were reportedly seen by military personnel, including officers on bases here in the United States, mm-hmm. as Russia at different times, going back into the 1960s, 1970s, at Minot Air Force Base, Malmstrom Air Force Base, somewhere called Ur, Russia. variety of Air Force bases, where which upon seeing many UFOs, the missiles deactivated for a period of time and then suddenly reactivated. Now, when they reactivated, scared the living you know what out of those that were operating supposedly, sure. reportedly. This is confirmed too by the Freedom of Information Act, by a document written by the attending officers at the U.S. bases. So it has, it's official. It's written. It's a written document.
Yeah.
And they acknowledge it. Now, again, it doesn't mean Martians are doing it. It could be, or it could be some again geomagnetic and atmospheric event that we simply don't know that somehow short-circuited the missiles. That's you know, maybe that's a possibility. I do not know. Or there's a message being sent by some advanced civilization that we shouldn't get too big, too bad, too soon. And you stop playing with fire, guys, and we're going to turn out these rockets. And the point is, the operators of the missiles said it was virtually impossible. Now, this is their word, but it was also reinforced by the officials on the base as well, saying what happened in terms of the deactivation and reactivation and then deactivation, that kind of game. Over a period of time, over a number of instances in different places, you know, is noteworthy. Let's just put it that way. And what you make of it, that's for you to decide. I just take notice that it's another aspect of overarching phenomena, or maybe more than one phenomena, because it also seems to affect people's consciousness. They do report communication, believe me. That's another line of evidence, along with the nuts and bolts, like Mendelssohn, including Roswell, as well as the Phoenix Lights. But again, the both the personal and the nuts and bolts evidence combined historically through the decades. If somebody sits down, and I attempted to do this, well, then did it right or wrong? I don't know. That's your readers to decide. I attempted to sit down and study the what's out there. And to try to make sense of it, analyze it, figure it out, write it down, publish a book. I didn't do it for the money. You know, I just, you know, I was always interested in the topic, very much so. So I just retired. I'm trying to do something similar to the research I've been doing for many, many years. I'm much older than you guys. but the point is, I have to keep my brain active. So I focus it in this particular area. Well, I'm not entirely sure. You know, we all have unique interests and hobbies, et cetera, et cetera. This is mine. So this is part of my retirement, I guess. If anybody studies this phenomenon in terms of the documented evidence in books, on the internet, personal accounts, they come away saying that there's something going on, without question. And sure. That's 2-3 times. What it is, that's up for conjecture.
Yeah. So I'm just going to recap this real quick. You have seen something that you would say is a UFO in the sky. You have done scientific research. You've read all of these reports, and more reports come out daily. It's not just the ones that you like. There was a Marine who came out and he was watching Guantanamo Bay, and he claims that he saw UFOs leaving and entering into the ocean, and he claims that he believes there's a UFO base there. So there's a lot of those things, and you still claim you're an agnostic. What is stopping you? Like, what's keeping you from being a full-fledged believer?
That's an extraordinary question. It's hard to understand, for me to understand, that is. I'm a trained scientist, and that's good and bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's bad in that I'm biased in the sense that I want to be able to manipulate it, analyze it in a laboratory setting. In a sense, I want to, and I can't with UFOs. It's an enigma. It's obscure. It defies a scientific method in terms of how best to study it. At least yeah. the way I understand it, and. So I want to see it land on the White House lawn. that would make me a believer.
Uh-huh.
I guess I'm trying to answer the question quickly in that sense. I'm leaning towards there's something paranormal happening. Paranormal meaning what? There's something that our science can't, scientific principles that simply can't answer. We don't have either have them yet, or we're just misinterpreting it for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And I would lean in that direction. There is something unusual happening, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah. For me, I almost feel like I'm missing is that personal experience. Like for me, so I claim I'm a believer in God because I feel God working it. Like I have that experience. But for UFOs, I can read all the stories I want. I can see all the news stories I want, and I can read all the books I want. But at the end of the day, I've never seen one that I would claim is enough to be like, oh, that's it. But it's just so interesting that there's so many people that claim to have seen it, and yet we're still skeptical. I think it's one of those things. It's so polarizing because there are people who are way more skeptical than I am. I would say there's a good chance that there could be extraterrestrial, but some people would say there's a 0% chance. So it's just interesting. It's such a polarizing topic that it's almost like no amount of research can prove to somebody this type of thing, because you almost have to experience it in order to believe it.
You're 100% correct. You're very, very insightful. I've talked to people that, in a sense, you're referring to, who were complete skeptics. UFOs never crossed their mind unless they saw Independence Day or, you know, that E.T. movie. However, that personal experience that you mentioned, they had it. They had such a pronounced personal experience. And I alluded to this earlier. Again, I'm not going into the specifics, but in general terms, they saw in their house, in their room, aliens, not only the Greys, but other types. And I have a survey, by the way, a large percentage are humanoid in appearance, but different nevertheless, but humanoid in appearance, that people claim to see. But that personal experience that they've had, yeah, it's more compelling than landing on the White House lawn. That is some unusual craft that, you know, accelerates vertically out of sight in the blink of an eye. What people consider a UFO, who knows what that was? It could have been this little light flying in the sky. It could have been a satellite. Who knows? You know, that wasn't compelling enough as certainly upfront and personal experience that many people have had. And we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions, who have had that. That's what, and that's why we're doing our survey, our study by free, to better understand those types of personal experiences that you alluded to. That may be where we should go in terms of looking at the similarities and differences of what people actually experience as part of their contact with something. What that something is remains to be seen. Are we talking about aliens, alien beings from somewhere? Who knows? Of some type? Who knows? Of some intelligence? Who knows? But they are left from that kind of experience with a life-changing transformation, usually for the better, but they're driven to get to the bottom of what is going on, but they change in terms of their personality in a positive way. Why? I don't know. But the point is this, there's a consciousness element to it. When you talk about, like you said, personal experience, mm-hmm. there's a consciousness component to it. Why there is, I don't know, but other researchers have said that over the years, including Dr. Hynek, who led Project Blue Book back in the 60s. He's an astrophysicist who studied the phenomena with other scientists and came away a believer. Initially, he was a skeptic. He believed it, and he wrote books on the topic. And he said that this phenomena is profound. It has significant sociologic, personal implications. He talked to the UN subcommittee back in 1974, and he said just that. Who am I? You know, Alan Hynek, and there are many Alan Hyneks, but he's quite unique. John Mack, the Harvard psychiatrist, another one. There are many. People forget them. Are they crazy? Maybe. wrong, possibly. But I listen to them, and that's why I'm not a debunker, but at least a skeptic. I acknowledge their research that I consider valid, appropriate, but we need to do more and develop new, again, scientific methods to address this phenomena in a much, much better way than we already are. We aren't, in a sense. We really aren't in a unified, organized fashion. And that is what we must do. We may find out, you know, there's no men on Mars. They're not coming here. But it's a psychological phenomenon. Great. We need to know that because it's affecting so many people. Or they are coming here. Or both.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
You know, tell me.
So it sounds like there's... I mean, based on what you were talking about with Hyman and stuff like that, there's been several initiatives to kind of uncover and do research in this, but it seems like they're scattered, and what you're kind of calling to the table is to kind of try and bring it all together to see where the similarities are and see if we can find any anything based by putting it together. And if that's true... based on your kind of perspective and knowledge and stuff like that, would you take a nomination from me to being the one that heads that up? And how would you structure it if you did?
You want to head that up?
No, you. I would nominate you to do it.
If you were
to be the one in charge of it, how would you structure it? Like, what would be your first steps and stuff and pulling all this stuff together?
Boy. That's a profound question. And
how would you make the UFO phenomenon great again is what I want to know.
What's that? I'm sorry. Say that again.
How would you make the UFO phenomenon great again is really what he's getting at.
Great again?
It was a Donald Trump joke.
Yeah,
don't worry about it.
I think that's hitting it on the head. I have to think about that, but I do address that in my book. And what I would do is find people, and what I would consider the right people. We're talking about trying to recruit leading scientists from different disciplines, fundraisers, those who have an interest in the area and willing to fund it, give us money. We need that for a variety of educational, PR reasons, develop a website, do studies, pay people, do research, a governance structure of some type. How that would be composed, I don't know. It would be multifaceted. We'd have to do a lot of planning, a lot of assessment, get like 5-6 key people from different disciplines together and brainstorm about what we need to do to make a unified governance / research / communications type of project, make it successful, make it serious, make it so that objectives can be achieved, hypotheses established, tested, proven or refuted, but tested. And have it worldwide, international scientists, not just the United States, Peru, Russia. All countries have their organization, UFO organizations like us, or organizations. And again, it's fragmented, and we need to put everything under one umbrella. How we go about doing that is daunting, and it may not be possible. But it's an excellent question. I don't have the time or energy, obviously, to do that at that stage in my life. But getting the key people to brainstorm and to work from the bottom up, in a sense, would be the best. General, very general, vague, cryptic, knee-jerk, like thoughts that are coming out of my mind.
Sure.
I do talk right. about that in my book. But there are different ways, people would approach it. Who knows what the right way may be?
Sure.
Well, you've convinced me. You've convinced me. I'll sign the petition.
Yeah. I guess I'll sign it too. Why not? We'll wrap up our time with this one, Bob. One thing that I think is interesting is you're currently in the beginning stages of writing your next book, which is about the afterlife. And so I kind of wanted to tie these two things together. One thing that we see a lot, and I'm sure you've seen a lot in your research, is that a lot of this paranormal stuff is connected. Those who experience an abduction is also sometimes struggling with sleep paralysis or seeing ghosts or whatever. They're almost all connected. So do you think that in order for somebody to truly believe, to truly buy into this whole UFO thing, do you think you also have to be just the type of person who buys into ghosts or believes that they can see ghosts or struggles with sleep paralysis or believes in psychics or can travel, like think that through time travel or out-of-body experiences? Are all of those things connected?
Wow. You know, we could write a book on that.
You should
write many books on that. In fact, I'm trying to do that. That's a mouthful. That's an excellent question. Excellent question. I can't give it service with the short amount of time we have remaining. All I'll do is say to your avid listeners to maybe consider, you know, reading my book or others on the afterlife for insight into that. But you're right. You mentioned the word interconnected. That's the key word, interconnected. And a lot of these phenomena, which ones, I don't know, are interconnected. Whether or not, you know, the survival hypothesis or the life afterlife, life after death, who knows, is related. Who knows? Who knows if it's real or not? Who knows, in other words, if the consciousness is separate than the brain? And that would have to be the case in order for there to be an afterlife, probably. Or is there this parapsychological issue here, ESP, telepathic communication? Mm-hmm. How does that integrate possibly with the UFO phenomenon? Some people contend it does. In fact, when you mention interrelatedness or interconnectedness, many people who do have these upfront and close personal encounters with UFOs and beings, a large percentage of them have NDEs, near-death experiences, mm-hmm. or other experiences. Why? I don't know. There is a connection, and how, you know, extensive it is, what the meaningful of it is remains conjecture. But there is that interconnection among many phenomenon, and many aren't. Doesn't seem to be related, but many do. People make the case that it is. People seeing ghosts. I don't know. That also is highly debatable. Like mediumship, parapsychology, all debatable. Nevertheless, there are skeptics, debunkers, and believers. And I don't care so much for debunkers. People who dismiss everything out of hand. That's impossible. Doesn't exist. Who aren't aware of the evidence? That's what bothers me. If you're aware of the evidence and you don't believe, okay, that's one thing. But if you're aware of the evidence, you should be skeptical. You don't have to believe it, but don't completely dismiss it in the sense that you put down people who do believe it. That's what I mean by debunking. And that's not cool. It's great to be a skeptic, I think, or agnostic. You should be. I'm sorry for being somewhat redundant, but there are some points I do want to bring across, and I guess I'm overdoing it. But anyway, I'll stop there.
No, I understand. It's interesting, though, like we talk about the interconnectedness, and you'd think that people like Dave and I, who are Christians and believe in a God that we can't see, you'd think that we'd also believe in these type of things. But for whatever reason, those two worlds oftentimes don't collide. So it's just an interesting thing. Like, it's, I don't know, there's interconnectedness, and then there's also things that you think would be connected but aren't connected for various different reasons. So it's interesting, and I'd definitely be reading that book that I believe is coming out in 2017. Hey, Robert, how can people find your UFO phenomenon book and also your upcoming book on the afterlife next year?
Well, thank you for mentioning that. They could visit my website, which is the UFOphenomenon.com, UFOphenomenon.com, and there I am with the book, and they can order it from Amazon if they wish, or read a few chapters and take it from there. They can listen to me talk on other radio shows through my website, and leave me messages, etc. And thank you for mentioning that. Eventually, I'll have my new book, the Life After Death, should I believe. It'll be coming out early next year, and I'll be on the website. So thank you for mentioning that.
Cool. Bob, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Just three skeptics talking about this. It's a treat. So thank you so much for bringing your expertise into the mix. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
I do appreciate it.
And me on your excellent show. I appreciate it, guys.
Thank you. You have a great one, all
right? Absolutely.
And that was Bob Robert Davis. Dave, boy, what a treat.
You're telling me, Bran.
He did say, towards the end he was redundant, and I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing, because there's a lot that he was saying that was so good and so interesting, and just, it was good to have another fellow skeptic that wasn't trying to convince us, but was just simply asking the questions that we have also asked, but maybe a little bit further down the road than we are.
A wee bit.
Yeah, a wee bit. Dave, what did you think? Did anything that he said stick out to you as was it noteworthy for you?
I liked what he said about the pulling everything together, and that's, I think, would be a very valuable thing to do, just to help debunk some things just by having contradicting stuff, and then more places where things agree. It puts a lot more credibility in those places.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see how it all lines up.
Yeah, I've never understood exactly. You got your MUFON, you got your SETI, you've got all these different groups that are all essentially trying to do the same thing, but they're not working together. So you'd think that, I mean, they're not doing the exact same thing, but they're studying the same thing. So you'd think it'd be useful for them to all get together and put all that under one umbrella, but
kind of like what we ended up doing with Russia, where we started working with them because we're both trying to get into space, so why not share resources to be efficient? Yeah. So you, same thing, you'd be much more efficient with your studies if you combine research so that you don't have to do research that's already been done.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're really thankful for old Bob coming on the show and talking to us. It was such a treat. Dave, we get back to the normal tomorrow. Some Starry Time news. Just love it. Just love the news.
That'll be a big old Thursday, right?
Absolutely, a big old Thursday. And Dave, one thing, just again, a few things that people can do to help out the show, go and subscribe. There's a few subscribe buttons on our website. You could also go and find us on your favorite app by searching Starry Time. I don't think you have to do much scrolling if you search Starry Time. So find us on your favorite podcast app and click subscribe. That allows us to get you every single episode that we put out each and every day. And if you want us to continue to put out content each and every day, one thing you could do is simply, leave us a review on iTunes and the podcast, the official iTunes podcast app. And that helps our podcast go higher up on the charts as far as people searching for our type of show, paranormal, ghosts, etc. And then another thing people can do, and this is a big thing, if you want to help us out, simply do the free trials that we offer during ads and do the beginning of the show. It's super huge. So Warby Parker this week, which you heard about earlier, just doing that type of stuff, or going back a week ago and doing Audible, that helps us out tremendously, believe it or not. You doing that one simple free trial helps us out. And these are actually products that we really like and care about. So help them out, and in the process, help your old pals at the Starry Time out.
It's just your old pals.
Just us. Hey, Dave, I hate it when it's done, but it is.
Yeah, have you shed your tear yet for this one yet? About it being over?
I got a good cry in, yeah.
You did? I did mine right at the end. I kind of just muted and went for a cry.
Yeah, man. It'll be okay. We'll get to do it again tomorrow.
I like how well your Donald Trump joke did.
I mean, I was really proud of it. Listen, I don't think Bob's a huge jokester, so I think a couple of our jokes, we didn't do many.
Did I do any?
No, I don't think you did any. I did. We talked about the name, and I don't think he was interested. And then
I guess that we're even now, because I did the Alka-Seltzer plus one.
Yeah, but my Trump joke was better.
Yeah, but the funny thing is that mine actually was received. It just wasn't really well liked.
It was, yeah. he took it, heard it, and hated it. Robert just wasn't having it.
So. You didn't say it to where it got there, because as soon as you started explaining is when he started going in on the next one.
So. Yeah, I mean, he said it was a great point, too, so maybe he's a Trump fan, and that's fine. Listen, each his own. Hey, Dave.
Well, yeah, true.
Dave, thanks for hanging out with me tonight, bud.
Bran, I gotta go, but I'll see you. How about we'll talk Thursday morning and do some news?
Okay, that sounds good. From, yeah, that Greenville.
And that Brooklyn, you got it. It's dinging hot.
This is the Star Time News, the IB podcast.
Yeah.
With Brandon.